expect when they listen on the recordings that they'll hear guys talking up. So firstly, I'd like to thank the chevra that pushed me to do this. I've done this, I try to do it, you know, before the end of every fast. Sometimes I'm sitting there with like one or two guys, but I don't mind.
The worst time ever.
So, yeah, so the pshat is, you're right. If people are sleeping, then
so
I'm not telling them they should wake up for it. But really, like, I do think this is like the most like kaddish time of a fast because you're beaten down. You know, you haven't eaten all day. And it's the last few moments. So, okay, yeah, so some people just roll into Ma'ariv or post-Ma'ariv. But ideally, if a guy could sit in the base medrash and learn and gain something, and really the ikar of fasting is to do tshuva. And we think, you know, the most basic thing is you learn Musar, that's already doing tshuva. So if you have a Musar vad, the last few minutes of tainus is probably like the best way to spend the tainus. Like at least the last few minutes you're chapping Musar, you know. Okay, really is a Musar seder beforehand, but wait, so you finish here on time, by the time you finish here, and this, you know, it's over. So I think it's a schus for everyone just to be here. So even if I don't have anything to say, but Maisa, Chazdei Hashem, I came across something which I think is an important thing. But first, let's talk about Asor B'Teiris itself. Nice to hear, I heard Rabbi Laredo say today. For some, in case somebody here already heard it, I'm quoting Rabbi Laredo. So Asor B'Teiris was a day, okay, there's a couple things that happened, the 8th, the 9th, right, the Torah was translated, Ezra and Nehemiah, Gedolei Olam, were Nifter, but on Asor B'Teiris was, they started the siege of Yerushalayim. But if you go through the history, they didn't really burn the base of Mikdash down for another
200.
He said by the thing, so I wasn't gonna, it took 11 years. Okay, I don't know.
I was reading in the
pamphlet. Okay, so the way the Sephardi history, the radio said it took 11 years from the beginning of Asor B'Teiris till Tisha B'Av happened. So the Mefarshim struggling with, so okay, so that was the beginning of the siege, but nothing happened for 11 years. So why is that something to have a fast for? So you tell me, okay, that's why I'm tsarif the other two, but it's not two dead horses, right? You know, agreed to such svaras, you know, this not, that not. So the pshat is, as you said, a beautiful pshat, that when Yerushalayim was, the siege started. So if we were alive at that time, we should realize, okay, something bad is happening. Now, is it at the Madrega that Beis HaMikdash is being destroyed? No. And they're able to, you know, work around the siege. I think the whole Gemara in Gittin talks about living under the siege for years.
Under the siege.
And it wasn't as nice as a Disney movie. But Lemaisa, this siege was a warning shot. And we should have seen the warning shot and done tshuva and forced Hashem to go backwards. But unfortunately, we didn't, and it went forward, and 11 years later, the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So the reason why we're fasting is because Hashem gave us a warning, and we didn't hearken to that warning. And that's what makes it a tragedy day. It's great to hear. So I want to talk globally, and then personally, with this concept of warning shots. That we have to like take heed of messages and like the hair things. So the first thing I'll talk globally. I'm not sure here. We have so many, forget about history buffs, but like news buffs. Anyone who's been following like Israel, you know, the state of Eretz Yisrael, the biggest threat to Eretz Yisrael for decades has been Iran. And Iran for over a decade has been trying to get a nuclear weapon. And I remember when Rabbi Yoshev was alive, there was some shaila that came to him. And Rabbi Yoshev stated that the greatest threat to Eretz Yisrael is Iran. This was 10 years ago. And they've been playing these games for momish over a decade, you know. Every different administration had different plans to make a peace treaty, would do this. Obama gave them cash, insanity. And Lemaisa, right now, they're at the threshold of what they call breakout, where they could actually produce a nuclear weapon. It's getting very, it's right there. We're talking a matter of months, weeks. And Israel, no, Baruch Hashem has been successful stopping it with so many different things over the decades. They had crazy computer programs that like made the, you know, the machine self-destruct. They assassinated many scientists. They had like crazy, crazy, super duper Mossad hits, which were amazing and great. But all that did so far is stall it. And looks totally on track for them to get a bomb within, for sure, months, a month, but it can even be weeks. It's that close right now. And there's real talk of Israel, you know, launching a mission. America, it's a hawk. Are they really going to do a mission, not do a mission? One of the things for Israel to do a mission is it's far for Israeli planes to go from. So they're hawking about getting this refueling plane. They could have a plane in midair that could refuel like 50 other jets. And they had a deal with America to sell them 8 planes. 2 of them they're supposed to get soon. And the shell is, if they want to launch an attack like now, they need the planes now.
So they hacked them. Launch an attack to who?
If Israel is going to launch an attack, they need those refueling planes right now.
Who did an attack?
And
Iran.
So the reports just came out this morning that America has refused to speed up the plans and give Israel those planes to do it, you know, for the next couple of years, which is very, very bad news. How's Israel going to do that? Israel has some refueling, you know, planes that can refuel, except here's the issue. They were made 50 years ago. To say that Israel's fleet is not ready is an understatement. These refueling planes that Israel currently have are 50 years old. They need these new planes. America has it. Right now, they're not giving it to them. So, like, the Tsara, Iran, is like a real, real threat. You know, probably if there wasn't so much going on in the Jewish world, maybe people would focus on that more, but everyone's busy, you know. You know, I've seen the 5 towns are having, they're having kinnises tomorrow because of all the tragedies that happened. You know, in the past, this crazy car crash on the way back from a reunion. One girl died, and a mother is like, mamish in a critical condition. The other people still in the hospital. But, you know, everyone's minding their own tsaras. But the global picture, yeah, there are tsaras, or warning shots. You know, in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, there, you know, the warning shots were, you know, sieging Yerushalayim. Okay. Today, warning shots are fired from Iran. Yeah, so, you know, we have to take heed. You know, we have to, you know, realize that, know that. But, okay, Lamaisa, let's talk practical. What about us? So, I'll first start with one story. I gotta be careful what I say, being recorded. But yesterday we had a Rebbe meeting. And sometimes Rebbein meetings are very like uplifting and exciting, and we hear stories of nachas reports from a Talmud that grows and steigs, you know. And anybody, you know, who looks around over here gets chizuk. Yeah, true. But yesterday, not going into details, but we had a Rebbe meeting, which was not nachas. I want to cry. So sad. Stories of guys who, you know, at one point were, you know, classmates. People with everybody else, and you hear about where they are now and what they're up to, falling off the cliff would not do justice to where they're holding. It's like,
what did everybody
say?
That you sometimes hear reports of telling them that, you know, you could be going up, and you could be going down. Like you can't imagine. It was like one bad story after another bad story after another bad story. It was like insane. Mom is insane.
Somebody in yeshiva now or just now?
Whatever. Yeah. And, you know, that, as a Rebbe, it's like, you know, it shakes you up. Like
that's not what they were saying?
It's, it was being said, whatever. There were to'alas to tell bad stories. It definitely wasn't very nogea, different things. But these things happen. And like, you know, you can't take for granted any guy who's on the straight and narrow. That's why it's called narrow, I guess, right? You know, kolam kulo gesher tsar ma'od, that you can have a guy. Like, these guys are classmates. And this guy is steiging. And this guy is like... Maisa, like, you know, it doesn't matter if you're an Eretz Yisrael. It doesn't matter if you're, you know, enrolled in the yeshiva. But, you know, I'm not talking about people not in yeshivas. I'm talking about people in yeshivas. But the paths they could end up in are so dangerous and so off the beaten path. It's scary. So I want to share a couple of stories which might shed a little bit of light on this and give us all a chizuk. Or hopefully get us chizuk by the end. So I have the sefer. This is written letters by Rav Shlomo Volbe. Obviously, Rav Volbe was considered one of the greatest Bali Musar of the past generation. The Rishiva was very machsh of him. And tremendous, tremendous pikach. So I came across a story that he records that he heard this maisa from another tzaddik, or the Ruben had shaykhs to Dov Yafa, Zatzal, by now. That originally, very interesting, that in the old Navardic yeshiva, the original Navardic yeshiva, run by the Alter Navardic, what would be if you had a guy in the yeshiva who was a big masmid, learned stark all the time, and didn't take a break for Moser Seder? So I guess, you know, I don't know, like we have these ideas of what a Moser yeshiva is. Like in Queens, if a guy wouldn't learn Moser Seder, you know, he's not getting smicha. Off with his head. Like that's a big deal. It seems originally Navardic, if a guy was a super masmid and would just learn Musar, learn Gemara, and wouldn't take a break to learn Musar Seder, the altar wouldn't do anything then. Until one Maisa happened. The Maisa happened was, there was a masmid in yeshiva. This guy learned mamish, picture in your own eyes what you view as the biggest masmid. And this guy was 10 times bigger than that, okay? So picture in your eyes, biggest masmid. He would learn in European standard, Yom HaValayla. He said, Raka b'simchas Torah, b'rofis lavas. This guy would dance a simchas Torah, mamish, like a beast. Okay. U'v'rofis rakshas, the kar of ne yeshiva. This is what he would say.
Like,
in the middle of the hakafos, he would, you know, shush the audience. He would say, Raposai. He's dancing with the Sefer Torah, holding the Sefer Torah. He says, you know what's so exciting? Right now, after Sukkot, it's coming winter time. And guess what happens? The nights are longer. And you know how much we could steig during these nights? Like, the guy's like super pumped. We're going to have the long Friday night night seders. We're going to have crazy night seders now. Long nights. We could just sit and learn. This is what he's thinking about when he's dancing with the Sefer Torah. Obviously, he was seemingly in love with Torah. Okay. After Yontif, I guess the way it worked in Europe was they let you off a few days until Rosh Chodesh, right? So you got to travel home to your house. Seems, while he was having home, he met some, you know, slick businessman. And guess what? He decided to leave yeshiva and go work. V'azah lim l'gamri. The altar was blown away. How is this shayach to hear of a guy who's the biggest masmid? On Simchas Torah, he's crying tears of joy that he's going to be able to learn so much. And some, you know, swift-talking used car salesman, slick back hair, goes and sells him, you know, some deal. And next thing he knows, he's selling on Amazon. The altar touched up. You know why this is happening? Because this bachur didn't learn Musar. That's why. And from then on, That's when the Navartic Yeshiva started being makbid. You must learn Musar. I don't care how big a masman you are. You learn 24/7. Just Torah alone is not enough. I'll tell you another story. This is a famous story about Rabbi Yisrael. Rabbi Yisrael also knew of a masmid that was a tremendous masmid. Rabbi Yisrael used this story to illustrate that a lot of times, talk about warning shots, a person has within him like a tiny, teeny tiny bad midah. But that teeny tiny bad midah, it never has an avenue to come across and come out. So, okay, Kolzman, he's in yeshiva, he's a good kid. He'll be okay, he's not doing anything crazy. But you take him out of that environment, you put him in the wrong environment, that little bad midah could just blossom. And so the story was, this guy was also a big masmid. All he cared about was learning. He got engaged, got married. And his father-in-law had a business. He had a store. So at some point, this son-in-law, the masmid, helped his father-in-law out with the store. V'tom es tama kesef. And he tasted the taste of money. V'tikaf ozav es alim l'gamri. Next thing he knew, he left it all. So these are two stories, one from the Alter Navartik, one from really his Rebbe, Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, of how people, you know, seemingly were like, totally on the right path. Masmidim, steiging yeshiva. But something went off. They weren't learning Musar. They had a bad midah. And they go off. So you say, okay, these stories happened 100 years ago, 200 years ago in Europe, the Haskalah, I don't know. I said this over in my share, but I didn't say this publicly here. I remember recently I was having a discussion with somebody, and I asked about a certain chashava younger man. Last I checked, he was Rosh Chabur in Lakewood. Last I checked. So I asked somebody, how's he doing? How's he steiging? And the person told me, not so much. Like, what happened? I knew the situation. This guy, Baruch Hashem, besides the fact he was good head, big masmid, all that, also, Kadosh Baruch Hu blessed him. His wife had a very successful business. So, besides the fact that he was very motivated to learn, tremendous hasmada, he was set to sit and learn in Lakewood for the next 40 years. His wife had a very successful business, and Baruch Hashem, you know, he could become the next Chazon Ish. Not the Imam, the next Chazon Ish, but he could sit and steig weiter. I guess I didn't ask about him in the past few years. I asked him what happened. Yeah, he's not really in yeshiva anymore. Yeah, whatever. He's basically, he got involved in his wife's business. What? Here's a guy who was steiging Rosh Chaburah. He had probably 40 guys in his Chaburah, 50 guys in his Chaburah in Lakewood. But whether it's like the first story, it's Tom Kesef, because once you taste money, you never know, you can have, it hits you, it connects with you. Or Stam, he didn't learn Musar enough.
Even with Musar, that would happen.
No, so the way the Alter and the Navartik and maybe Sral are touching up is no, a person who's learning Musar, the hope is, look, it doesn't mean a person who learns Musar is going to change overnight, he's going to be the nicest person in the world. Unfortunately, we see lots of people learning Musar, they're not the nicest people. But Musar helps you be better than what you would be otherwise. And Musar definitely helps for a person to make a cheshbon, a nefesh. That, you know, Musar makes you think and double think. Okay, what am I doing? How's it possible? Yesterday I was steiging, and today I'm giving it all up. I'm going on this path, and I go to that path. It makes you double check and triple check. And I think that's something that, Jimmy Mechazik, you know, one thing to walk away from a tinus today is to realize, you know, when you hear a story like this, I think it's a bigger chiddush than the story I told you. You know, I tell you a story, some 12th grader, you know, goes to Eretz Yisrael, and next thing he knows, he winds up in the wrong crowd. You know, Zundel could tell you lots of stories like that, right? It's a dangerous place, lots of people, so many bad opportunities. But you know what? It can happen to a guy in yeshiva too, who's still steiging and growing. Because in life, you know, there are always on nisyonos. And just because a guy's steiging when he's 18 years old doesn't mean he'll continue to steig when he's 20 years old. And a guy's steiging when he's 20 years old, who said he's steiging when he's 22 years old? At 24 years old, 26 years old. So a person needs mussar to keep him on track. I should always analyze, where am I going? What am I doing? What was my goals? What was my goals 2 years ago? Did something really change? Should I downgrade? Should I this? Should I that? Mussar makes a person think and challenge yourself. And you look, it's very easy to get in a rut. You know, we're at the point of the year, it's from now till Pesach, oh boy. Right? We have a long stretch. And there's lots of times for ruts and this. We didn't even start construction yet. You know, who knows the tsaros we're going to have, the haks. But if a person constantly looks to be mechazik himself, mussar is just simple self-maintenance. Look, everybody runs either gas or battery. You need something, right? You constantly need to recharge. And mussar is the best way to recharge ourselves, to make sure that we're still going on the right path. And Be'ezah Hashem, those of us that take just a few extra minutes before a tainus, it's a very encouraging thing. Take a tainus, appreciate what mussar is. Be'ezah Hashem, those who hold on to mussar, Rabbi Yisrael says, Alter Nevardik says, Volbi says, not me, them, that's the hopefully the closest thing we have to a guarantee that Be'ezah Hashem will always stay on the straight and narrow. Thank you for listening.